Good morning, Chelveston, Calder Garden, Chelston Rise. It's Monday the 25th of May, and this is Adrian Dale with the Daily Podcast. Well, it was a great privilege yesterday to deliver the final tulips from Blom's to our vulnerable households. This time the chiller really is bare, and we've come to the end of the season. These tulips have been more than just flowers. They've been a beacon of joy and hope for the village during the emergency. They've brought smiles to the faces of those who've been suffering the most as they've shielded themselves from the virus. And they've also enabled me to visit all of these households and check for certain that they were okay during the crisis. Sadly, this week was a reminder that the normal tragedies of life continue. One of our clinically isolating residents lost her adult son to a heart attack, and two other households suffered hospitalizations from existing conditions. Delivering a little ray of brightness to them yesterday was the least I could do. For the rest of us, those tulips were a great start to VE Day, and they allowed us to run the tulip arranging competition in aid of Great Ormond Street Hospital. The village rallied to the cause and dug deep, with donations of over £1,700. Who knew that tulips could be so powerful? So a big thank you from us all to Chris, Elaine, Michael and Amanda for all they've done. Well, we've still got one big event left, which will hopefully close our emergency as we take those steps back towards the new normal, whatever that is. The community events team is running Pete's Key Worker Scarecrow Competition. Judging will be on the 13th of June, the Saturday, but we need entries registered by the 5th of June. So folks, let's push the boat out and show how creative we've all become during the lockdown. Now, I've spent my last 2 days sticking my neck out and being really critical of the government's response to the crisis. Yesterday's Sunday Times published a detailed investigation, which unfortunately confirmed my analysis in full. I'll post a link to the article in the newsletter. It certainly makes grim reading. However, we are where we are, and we now need to work our way out of this mess. But the current strategy seems to be all about adapting our lives to live with social distancing and isolation until we find a cure or a vaccine. So essentially, we need to accommodate the virus and spend billions more doing so. But isn't this somewhat reminiscent of the appeasement policies pursued by Chamberlain in 1938 before the Second World War? The argument went, we can't beat Hitler, so now we need to learn to live with him. Well, I think that was a bad policy then, and it's a bad policy now. Living with this virus condemns over 1 million people to permanent isolation. It'll wreck thousands of businesses that are not viable with social distance in place. Millions of young people will have social lives ripped apart. Holidays abroad will be a nightmare, and all the gains made on the environment will be thrown away if everyone abandons public transport. Surely there must be a better way. But why are we doing this? We're doing it because a small group of people refuse to obey the rules, and the rest of us are paying the price. We're tackling the wrong problem again. We shouldn't be living with the virus. We need to eradicate it. And I think it's possible if we get our collective act together. And please don't say it's too expensive. We've spent £145 billion so far, and we've got absolutely nowhere. Now, the Office of National Statistics estimates that between a quarter and a half percent of the country has COVID-19 right now. So that means that over 99.5% of us don't have it. So realistically, in a sensible world, the rest of us, the ones without it, should be completely free to go about our business as normal, provided, of course, we can be guaranteed to be safe. It's the other 0.5% we need to worry about. It's common sense. We should be chasing down that 0.5% and putting them and their families into mandatory quarantine until they are free of the virus, not locking up the rest of us. So here's how we do it. It's all about targeted testing. And I don't mean the antibody tests that have been trumpeted about to show us who's had the virus. Frankly, I don't care about that. There's no guarantee that an infection gives you long-term immunity anyway. It doesn't with a common cold. All that matters now is who has it now. I want to know who they are and I want to avoid them. Now, we already have a 75-minute COVID-19 test that can reveal results in just over an hour. a 20-minute minimally invasive test started trials 3 days ago. This is the key to getting us out of permanent lockdown, if only the government would recognise it. I think that we need to introduce a virus passport for everyone in this country that wants to rejoin society. The virus passport will show if you are virus-free and when you were last tested. The passport would expire, and the expiry date will depend upon what job you have. Doctors, nurses, dentists, hairdressers, beauticians, podiatrists, they all need to be tested daily because they are potential super spreaders. They need to be clear before they start work in the morning. And a 20-minute test whilst having a cup of coffee is really no big deal if it allows you to get back to work. And people attending surgeries, clinics, hospitals or salons, they similarly need to have a validated virus passport with a negative test confirmed that day. All of these locations are potential super spreaders with the potential to infect vulnerable people. So if you want a haircut, go to a test centre an hour beforehand, get your passport revalidated, and you can then go into the salon. For all other businesses, locations and events, we need a risk-based approach which can be statistically modelled. Schools may be able to do weekly testing. Just line up the kids and the teachers on a Monday morning and validate their passports once more. Teaching can then safely happen without all that mess of social distancing problems. And if we find that kids are picking up infections by the end of the week, then we move to one Monday, Wednesday, Friday testing, and so on. For an outdoor sports event, you'd be barred from attending unless you had a passport validated within the last week. For an indoor pop concert, we'd be more strict and require validation in the last 24 hours. Similarly for a pub, the staff might be validated every couple of days, and the customers might be asked to show a passport validated in the last 2 to 3 days. Now, the exact times are not relevant. They can be assessed by careful modelling and analysis of infection rates. Shops will need careful modelling depending upon what they sell, but similar principles apply. And here in this village, which is obviously what I care about, I want to know that anyone entering the village hall or the church has a virus passport less than 1 week old. Now, if you're found to have a positive test, then you and your immediate family need to be isolated. We don't need to trace your contacts, as they'll soon be caught by the system the next time they try to do anything. However, we must ensure that the infected don't leave the house, not even to walk the dog. We recruited an army of 750,000 NHS helpers at huge expense, and most of them were never called upon. These people can be reactivated to walk the dogs and do the shopping of those 0.5% of houses that are locked down. On public transport, where cashless tap-and-go facilities are already in place, you won't be able to get a bus or a train or a tube unless you've got a valid virus passport. And in reality, you wouldn't even be able to get into a railway station. So what about the objections and the practicalities? Well, for a start, what form would a passport take and how can it be made mandatory? It's simple. A smartphone linked to a virus passport database and a person's identity is all that is needed. The passport would then show real time when you were last tested. Ah, yes, but what about civil liberties? Wouldn't that mean identity cards for all? Well, let's face it, folks. Most of us already have a driving license or a passport or a credit card. And if a person doesn't have ID and they want to go anywhere or do anything, then they've got a simple choice. Get a valid ID or you do nothing. Sorry, we're in desperate times and it's not a big deal. What about if they don't have a smartphone, someone will say. Well, given the billions wasted so far, I'm very happy that the government supplies a basic smartphone to anyone that hasn't got one. It's not that hard. You see, we eradicated smallpox from this planet. Why are we dithering again with COVID-19? We can't cure it, we can't vaccinate against it, and it's devastating our lives. The only viable long-term solution is to trace those infected before they interact with and infect others. And this can only be done at the point of interaction, not after the fact, like the present approach to track and trace. In South Korea last week, one infected man going to 5 bars one night infected nearly 100 people. The effort to track and trace the contacts was huge, and they were very embarrassing, as actually the places he went were closet gay bars. My point is, why was he allowed into the bar in the first place if he was infected? Of course, this will be a huge change to our lives, but so will permanent social distancing, and I would rather accept regular testing than have to dance around everyone in fear of my life for the rest of my life. But then again, what do I know? I'm just a grass cutter. Thank you.